All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Nama. All Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prashnaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nita Namini. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachamani Yurase Sisimidani Bhakti Vandeham Sri Guru Srimita Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamsta. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sahagantam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Stra Manchakapa Chibhishta Kivasin Pigavitam Kitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnavi Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's April 3rd, 2019, New Govardhan, Australia. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 1, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma, Text 30. Tadopasamritya griha sahasranir
Tadopasamritya griha sahasranir
Vimukta sangam mana adi purushe
Vimukta sangam mana adi purushe
Krishneva satpita pate chatur bhuje
Krishneva satpita pate
Purastite milita jigvadarayat. Tada. At that time, upasamhritya, withdrawing, giraha, speech, sahasranihi, Bhishmadev, who was expert in thousands of sciences and arts, Vimukta Sangam, completely free from everything else. Manaha, mind. Adi Purushe, unto the original personality of Godhead. Krishne, unto Krishna. Lasat Pita Pate, decorated with yellow garments. Chatur Bhuje, unto the four-handed original Narayana. Puraha, just before, stite, standing, amilita, widespread, drik, vision, vyadarayat, fixed. Srila Prabhupada's translation. Thereupon that man, who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings, and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men, stopped speaking, and being completely free from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else, and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, who stood before him, four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the momentous hour of leaving his material body, Bhishma Deva set the glorious example concerning the important function of the human form of life. The subject matter which attracts the dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. That sentence is italicized. I'm assuming it was italicized in Prabhupada's original Bhagavatam. Therefore, if one is absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, he is sure to go back to Godhead without any doubt. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 8:5:15. And whoever, at the time of death, quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time, carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. He who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviating from the path he, O Partha Arjuna, is sure to reach me. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and being transcendental is beyond this material nature. One who at the time of death fixes his life air between the eyebrows and in full devotion engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Persons learned in the Vedas who utter Omkara and who are great sages in the renounced order enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall now explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation. The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagements, closing all the doors of the senses. So what's that in Astanga Yoga? Pratyahara, yes. Closing all the doors of the senses. There's all the bandhas, yeah? Familiar, some of you? And fixing the mind on the heart and the life air at the top of the head, one establishes himself in yoga. Okay, what instruction did Krishna just give 2 verses ago that's different from this one? Without looking, who was really listening? He said, just remember me, and now he's talking about Asanga Yoga, but he's giving a very, very specific instruction in this verse, and he gave a very specific, different instruction 2 verses ago. Yes, about the life air. What did he say? The other verse, he said, put it between the eyebrows. Now he's saying,
top of the head.
Put it at the top of the head, and he says, put the mind. So put the life at the top of the head and put the mind where? It's giving a place. In the heart. Interesting. Right? So in text 10, he says, put the life there between the eyebrows. What chakra is?
The eye chakra.
Huh? What's that chakra called? Agya chakra. Agya chakra. Now he's saying you put the life there at the top of the head. What chakra is that?
Crown.
Crown chakra. Sanskrit. Anybody know? Ramarandra, it's called also, yes, the Sahasra chakra. And the mind in the heart, what chakra is that?
Anahata.
Anahata. After being, now this is Prabhupada's quoting here, text 13 of the Bhagavad Gita. After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the personality, Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. For one who remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world which is full of miseries because they have attained the highest perfection. So that's the end of Prabhupada quoting Bhagavad Gita 8:5-18. Prabhupada continues, Sri Bhismadeva attained the perfection of quitting his body at will and was fortunate enough to have Lord Krishna, the object of his attention, personally present at the time of death. He therefore fixed his open eyes upon him. He wanted to see Sri Krishna for a long time out of his spontaneous love for him. Because he was a pure devotee, he had very little to do with the detailed performance of yogic principles. So that's interesting, because after Prabhupada quoting these verses about yogic principles, he then said that Bhismadeva had very little to do with them. He doesn't say that he had nothing to do with them. He has very little to do. Simple bhakti yoga is enough to bring about perfection. Therefore, so if we're worried about this, well, I don't know how to put my life air in my Agya chakra, my Sahasra chakra, and am I supposed to put my life air in my... What am I supposed to do? Is it Agya chakra or the Sahasra chakra? And then how do I put my mind in the Anahata if my prana is in the Sahasra? How do I do both of those? You know, if we read that, we go, oh my God, I don't even know the names of the chakras. What am I going to do? So Prabhupada says, simple bhakti yoga is enough to bring about perfection. Therefore, the ardent desire of Bhismadeva was to see the person of Lord Krishna, the most lovable object, and by the grace of the Lord, Sri Bhismadeva had this opportunity at the last stage of his breathing. Tadopasam hitya gra sahasranir vimukta sangam mana adipuduse Krishne lasat pita pate chatur bhute purasti te milita drig vidyarayat. Do you guys know what dara means? We have giri dara. What does dara mean?
Holding.
Holding. Yes. This is also one of the stages in Ashtanga Yoga. Dharana comes after Pratyahara. So Pratyahara is you withdraw your senses from everything else. And Dharana, you hold the form of the Lord. And by holding the form of the Lord, you come to Dhyana, or meditating on that which you are holding, he which you are holding, and finally enter to Samadhi. Translation, thereupon that man who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings, and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men, stopped speaking, and being completely free from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else, and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who stood before him, four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. And here Prabhupada is saying, the subject matter which attracts a dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. Everything is seated upon desire and attachment. The purpose of these practices in Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga is to mechanically help one fix one's mind. It's just really that simple. I mean, just like we have a building here, we're not just sitting out under the trees in the rain because it's easier to fix our mind on what we're doing when we're in a shelter. Yeah? Right? If we were sitting out in the rain, we'd be very distracted by the rain, and it would be more difficult to concentrate on what we're doing. So the Ashtanga Yoga process takes the body and puts the body and mind in a state where concentration is more easy, as concentration is easier. But the point is not those processes in and of themselves, like the point is not the building. Hare Krishna movement, Krishna consciousness movement, it's not a building movement. It's a consciousness movement. The buildings are to facilitate that consciousness. So the big thing is consciousness, what we desire, what our mind is fixed on. And basically, nitya nityanam, chaitanya chaitanam, eko bhavanam yo vidadanti kaman. Krishna gives us whatever we desire. Krishna gives us whatever we desire. The body we have right now is the result of our desires, expressed both in this life and in our previous lives. Now, if we think about that, you know, if we look in the mirror and go, gosh, is this what I wanted? Right? And a lot of people, they look in the mirror and they don't like what they want, and they go to, you know, they buy lots of makeup or go see a plastic surgeon and buy hair dye, all this kind of stuff, and get clothes that pinch them here and squeeze them there and add something more over here and over there. Because they don't like the body they got, even though it was their desire. I mean, we even have this experience with ordinary things. I may think, gosh, I really want that pair of shoes. I really want that pair. I was with a devotee one time when she said, I really need some new shoes. We stopped in a shop. I like those shoes. And she got them, and as she was wearing them, they hurt her feet. Right? She had to put all these bandages on her feet to wear her shoes. So often we're like, but then she still wanted to wear her shoes, which was interesting. I said, why do you keep wanting to wear your shoes that hurt your feet? But they're pretty. So it's something like that. We have these desires. I think I'm going to enjoy, like this, like this, like this, like this, like this. Those desires induce us to actions. She had the desire, therefore, she bought the shoes. In order to buy the shoes, she had to have money. In this case, it was her parents' money. Actually, she earned that money. She had worked. So to get money, we have to work. We have to earn that money. So it's a combination of our actions and desires. It's not just desires. It's not like you can just sit in your living room and go, you know, I desire, I desire, I desire, and like a, you know, magical Prakti City, it's just going to show up. But when we desire things, Krishna gives us the intelligence, matasmajjnanapohanamcha, to work in such a way that we'll achieve our desire. You know, if you really want to become a lizard, Krishna will instruct you how to act so that you can become a lizard. If you want to become a pig, he'll instruct you how to act so you'll become a pig. If you want to become a celestial angelic being, He'll give you instructions how to act so that you become one. But unfortunately, when we get the results of our desires materially, we're not 100% satisfied. Anybody here materially 100% satisfied with their life? Materially speaking? You know, the particular family we were born into, the kind and extent of education that we had, the physical features of our body. Some people really don't like the gender of their body. The mind that we have, how our mind works, what we're good at, what we're not good at. Like, I have a son who can just remember numbers. I can remember concepts, but I can't remember numbers. So we each have different minds, right? Our particular talents, our nature, our personality. Some of us are very introverted, some of us are very extroverted. Some of them, I think, like, what's her name? Julia Roberts, the famous, is that her name? The famous movie actress. She's a Hindu. She's become a Hindu. And she says, I hope in my next life I'm really shy and introverted. Because whatever we are, there's some problem with it, right? If you're really extroverted, you have problems. If you're really introverted, you have problems. And when we're really introverted, we think, I wish I was extroverted. If we're really extroverted, we think, I wish I was introverted, whatever it may be. Right? If we're really tall, we're like, oh, why do I have to be so tall? And if we're really short, we think, why do I have to be so short? And so we try all these different bodies, one after another, right? In all these different circumstances. And this happening even in this life. It's not all in these lives, even some of the things that happen in this life. This is what I desire. If I desire to eat healthy food, and I actually eat healthy food, then I'll be healthier and I'll have more energy. And if I desire to eat the third piece of cheesecake, you know, and I actually do that and spend my hard-earned money on that, then I may sleep the rest of the day. Right? And I may get sluggish digestion for so many things. So it's all based on desire. Krishna's kind of a very liberal parent. So he gives good advice, he gives good instruction, but then we get whatever we want. And this is particularly true, this is particularly operative when we die. So why when we die? So many years ago, I was taking my Gurukul students on a field trip, and when we were coming back to the school, we saw these huge clouds of billowing smoke in the air. And the kids said, I want to go see that. Right? Ghastly rasa. So we went to go see it, and it was this whole apartment building that was on fire. The fire was so high and so hot, the fire trucks, nobody could get near it. We had to stay a few blocks away. Finally, the fire trucks came and started putting water on the fire. We were able to go a little closer. We were there for quite a while. And we saw standing on the sidewalk near the home, there was this youngish woman, probably in her 20s, and she had three little children next to her. She was standing barefoot with three young children. And she said that one of her neighbors had been cooking with oil and went to answer the phone. When she answered the phone, the oil caught on fire and the fire went up the wall. And it all of a sudden she saw fire coming up the wall in her apartment from this other person's kitchen. And so what did she do? She grabbed her children. She didn't take her wallet or her driver's license or even her shoes. She didn't take, you know, her family heirlooms. She didn't take her books of photographs. She didn't take any of those things. She took her children. So the time of death is like that. Whatever we say is important to us. I can say Krishna is the most important to me. But at the time of death, mentally, I will try to grab something. I'll try to take something with me. Maybe I'll try to take someone with me. Maybe I'll try to take my wife or my husband or my children or my dog. Maybe I'll try to take my money with me. Maybe I'll try to take my home with me. You know, if I built the home, I designed it, I built it, I might try to take my home with me. I might try to take my list of friends with me or my career or my knowledge. There's something I'm going to grab. Or something I'm going to lament over. Oh, I'm dying and I never made a lot of money. No. Now I'm dying and I never had a decent family. Oh, I'm dying, I'm going to leave the country that I love, whatever. And Krishna, to fulfill the desire of a living entity, gives the person that thing. Of course, it's also what you've earned. right? My devotee friend who bought those shoes, they were cheap shoes. She bought them at a cheap shop because she hadn't earned enough money to buy a very expensive pair of shoes. So, you know, when you want a fancy red sports car, are you buying a used one that's, you know, 20 years old? Or are you buying a really fancy, expensive one? So it depends on your desire and also our karma, how many karma coins that we have. Like Prabhupada said, if you're really attached to living in your building, but you've been very sinful, then you may be a cockroach in your building. You get to live in your building, but as a bug. Also, this is what drives everything. So why is it a combination of activities? Because our activity shows our real desire. If I say I want to be a medical doctor, but I never finished secondary school and I just lie on the couch watching the football game and drinking beer, then my desire to be a doctor isn't very strong. Does that make sense to everybody? So it's not just what I want. Oh, I'd love to be rich. What are you doing to be rich? Nothing. So I really don't want it very much. Yes? What we really want is exhibited by what we do. Just like many times people say, oh, if I could do this and that, but I don't have enough money. Or I don't have enough time. 9 times out of 10, the problem is not that we don't have enough of something, but that we have different priorities. That we're prioritizing our time, we're prioritizing our money in a way that's opposite to our stated desires. So therefore, when Krishna fulfills all of our desires, he's looking not only at emotionally what we say we want, but also practically what we do about what we say we want. And the time of death is especially important because it focuses us like anything. I remember that Bhakti Tirtha Swami, once he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, he was saying that when you're facing death, it strips away everything false. It strips away everything that's superfluous, that you're doing but you don't really care about. It just laser sharp focuses you on what you really care about. You know, there's a book I quote from in one seminar about the regrets of the dying, the top 5 regrets of the dying. You know, when people are dying, they realize, oh, this was what I really cared about. So it's a way for the soul, of course Krishna already knows what we really care about, but it's a way for the soul to access what one's real desires and drive one to the next body. So we are told over and over and over again by the Lord and by the Acharyas that the very best thing to desire is service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That of all the possible things that we could desire, all the possible persons we could desire, all the possible activities we could desire, all the possible bodies that we could desire, all the myriad unlimited desires we could have, this is the best desire. That if we had this desire, we would get all of our subsidiary desires fulfilled. And we see that, like when Dhruva Maharaj saw the Lord, he felt that all of his desires were already fulfilled. And the desires for which he came to the Lord in the first place, he felt he didn't need them anymore. It's just like, why do we want money? Well, we want money to have security. We want money so we can have shelter. We want money so we can have pleasurable things. We want money so we can have time for fun. We want money so we can have status, so we can have freedom. But suppose you had all those things. Suppose we had security, status, fun, freedom, all enjoyable objects. Would we need cash? No. If we had everything that money gets for us, we wouldn't need the money. Does that make sense to everybody? So when one gets Krishna, one doesn't need all these subsidiary things. One is fully satisfied. And it's not that you give up all the material desires just out of repulsion. It's just like, ugh, many gods, women. But just you have Krishna and then you're like, I don't need that. I just don't need it. You know, yesterday we ate at Lucid and we had their burger and fries.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. It know, when you have it, if someone comes to you, you know, I have some 3-day-old bread, you'd go like, no, I don't need that. Now, if you were really, 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 really hungry, right, you'd want the 3-day-old bread. If you were really hungry, you'd even eat something that you don't like at all, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Some food normally you're like, no way do I want to eat that. But if you haven't eaten for a week, then you're going to eat that. But if you have sumptuous, delicious food to eat, naturally you don't want to eat that. So why is it that Krishna is like that, that all of our desires are fulfilled? Om purnama da purnami da purna purna ujjate purnasya purnama da purnami da vasishvate. Because he's unlimitedly complete. Everything that we could desire is contained within him. Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's the form of all tastes. Whatever kind of pleasure we like, whether it's wonder and awe at the, you know, the fog and the mountains and the flowing rivers and the beautiful sunrise, or, you know, talented people doing amazing things, that rasas in Krishna. The rasa of serving others, feeling that we're doing some good as part of something greater than ourselves. That's in Krishna. That feeling of friendship. You know, I have somebody that they can count on me and I can count on them, and we have fun together as equals, and we can even insult each other. That's totally cool. You know? And the pleasure of taking care of somebody, guiding somebody, nurturing somebody, giving wisdom to somebody, feeding somebody. That's there in Krishna. And romantic pleasure. The all-encompassing drive of romance. And that, where you totally forget everything and you fall head over heels in love, and who cares about the consequences, right? And you feel that that person is part of your body, the other half of your body, which you couldn't live without. And you surrender everything, your body, your mind, to that person. That's there in Krishna. And comedy and joy is in Krishna. And compassion and this kind of sadness that we like when people watch a sad movie and they go, oh, it's a great movie. That's in Krishna. And even ghastliness is in Krishna, with the Singhadev wearing an intestinal garland. And the exciting kind of fear that you get on a roller coaster, that's in Krishna. Krishna's in Kaliya's coils, and Krishna's gone too much of us. Chivalry, being, you know, sportive. That when we play games with other people and we're trying to win, but we celebrate if they win too, and giving charity and feeling righteous, that's all in Krishna. Anything that we can try to enjoy, anything that we want to enjoy, that's in Krishna in perfection. Unlimitedly. I was just reading yesterday, Rupa Goswami was saying how there's unlimited anubhavs between Krishna and the cowherd girls. The anubhavs are all of the transitory emotions. I say unlimited. You know, we can list, I don't know, 50, 60 emotions. But unlimited. So everything we want is included in Krishna in perfection with no downside. You know, when I enjoy something here, there's always a downside, isn't there? Before, after, or both. You have to pay for something before you get it, and you have to pay for it after you got it. And then even while you're enjoying it, it's not perfect enjoyment. So therefore, Krishna is the best to desire. And how do we desire? We fix our mind on him completely. When we desire something, we absorbed our mind in it, isn't it? Yeah? And the more we desire something, the more we think about it. That can be desiring to get rid of something too, but it can be an aversion. We can also be absorbed in aversion. So here Bhishma Dev is giving us the example of two ways of absorbing our mind in Krishna in order to reach perfection. So he was someone, what did he do? Anybody remember? This verse. He could speak on
thousands of topics.
Thousands of topics with thousands of meanings. and he fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men. So both mentally and physically, Bhishma was engaged in thousands of occupations. To speak on thousands of topics with thousands of meanings, fought on thousands of battlefields with thousands of men. And during all that time, he was fixed on Krishna. And Prabhupada's quoting these verses from the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that right after Krishna says, yam yam smat bhakti smaram bhavam, whatever you think of me, you attain. Whatever you think of me at the time, whatever you think of at the time of death, you attain. Right after that, he says, mama nusram yuja cha, think of me while you're fighting. And this, yeah?
I just have a question. Why is, do you think thousands is such a powerful number?
I don't know.
I hear this so often that your thousands is just like...
I don't know. I mean, it could be because the Bhagavatam is poetry. So it could be that Sukadeva Goswami is not like literally counting the thousands. But it's a way of saying many, many, many. That's entirely possible, just like we do that. Oh, I've been there thousands of times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So there's a similar thing that goes on in every language.
Okay.
Right? Or, I've eaten there millions of times. That's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
But that's the, what we often say. So, Ridhananda Maharaj talks about that, how that also in Sanskrit, in the Shastra, because we have to remember Bhagavatam is also poetry. So sometimes he sings millions of times, thousands of times. Of course, some of the numbers are very specific. Like Robin says, the numbers about the species of life are they're literal and specific. So I don't know here if it's literal that he fought on thousands of battlefields. That would be a whole lot, even though he lived a long time. I'm not sure if somebody counted all the battlefields. That's a good question. Thank you. So it's interesting that Krishna then goes on here and says, think of me while you fight. Now let's say we were doing Astanga Yoga, and it's interesting that Krishna, after saying, think of me while you fight, starts talking about Astanga Yoga. But just a couple chapters before, the 6th chapter, where Krishna finally basically says to Arjuna, hey, if you really want to walk away from the battlefield, this is what you do. Was Krishna talking about fighting in the 6th chapter? By the way, no. He talked about leaving everything. Leave your occupation. Leave the battlefield. Go to the forest. Become a brahmachari. Leave Draupadi and Subhadra. Sit in the forest on deer skins. Stare at your nose. Right? And Arjuna heard all this and he's like, no! That's too hard, and I'm just going to fail. And then Krishna goes on, and here he's talking about, well, think of me while you're fighting. And this principle, which Rupa Goswami talks about as Yukta Vairagya, that in everything we do, we think of Krishna, this is the main principle of the Hare Krishna movement. We don't spend most of our day in our sadhana, we spend most of our day in various activities. You're planting tomatoes, or you're taking care of the cows, or you're managing the accounts, or you're weeding the gardens. And so many things that we're each doing all day. Maybe we can't speak on thousands of subjects with thousands of meanings. Maybe we can just speak on a few dozen subjects with a few dozen meanings. But we have so many things that we're able, that we know about, that we can talk about, that we're doing. And at the same time, we can think about Krishna. Now, how do you do that? There has to be some love. So before my daughter met her husband, at first they were just communicating over the computer, first on the phone, but in those days, phone was different. It was a big, long-distance phone bill, and I said, you can't do that anymore. So then they were chatting on the computer for like 3 weeks before they actually met. During that time, she was a Gurukul teacher, and she said, Mati, even when I'm teaching maths or science, I'm just thinking about him. You know, the reason she mentioned maths and science is because those subjects tend to really occupy your thinking. And if any of us have been in love, you know, in real romantic love, then we know that we think about that person all the time, at least for a while. Isn't it? It doesn't usually last your whole life, even if you marry the person. Unless you're like, you know, King, what's his name? Priyavata, who married Bahirshmati, and it said their love for each other was always increasing. But generally, we feel like that maybe the first year or two that we're with somebody, and then after that, we don't think about them all the time anymore. But at least in the beginning, we think about them all the time, while we're driving, while we're eating, we dream about them at night. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. Right? But it's not that everyone who falls in love has to stop working, they can't function anymore. Sorry, I can't function anymore. Just thinking about it all the time. You know, you're still going through your life. Or when you have a baby, you know, you have a little, any of you who are parents, so you have a little newborn baby, and you're just thinking about that baby all the time. Right? You go in the other room, like, is he breathing? Is he breathing? Is he breathing? You're waking up in the middle of the night, you're checking him, is he breathing? Is he breathing? Someone else is watching your kid, you're like, is my kid okay? Is my kid okay? Is my kid okay? You know, again, that decreases. I'm not calling up my, you know, 45-year-old son and saying, this is 44 now, it's not quite 40. So I'm not calling him up and saying, are you breathing? Are you breathing? Right? But that, there's that absorption. Or another nice example, and again, any of you women who are mothers, so when you're pregnant with a child, you're thinking of that child all the time. Isn't it? We have at least one pregnant lady here. Aren't you thinking of your child all the time? You never forget that you're pregnant. You just don't forget. You're doing so many things. You may be taking care of other children and being with your husband and your friend or your parents, or maybe working and driving your car and eating, but all the time you're thinking, how is my child? Oh, my child's moving. Oh, my child's moving over there. Is this going to be good for my child? Is this going to be good for my child? Why? Because there's love. We even do this with objects. You know, if you're planning on buying a new car, you may be thinking about it all the time. But in addition to thinking about Krishna all the time, while we're speaking on thousands of subjects with thousands of meanings and fighting on thousands of battlefields with that, protecting thousands of people, we're also supposed to think about Krishna, just thinking about Krishna, and not running around doing all kinds of other things. And that's what Bhishma finally does at the last moment. He's been speaking all about Dharma on all different subjects on the request of Krishna. He's been speaking to Yudhisthira, giving all this important instruction. And now he's like, it's time. Just Krishna. Nothing else. So we're supposed to practice for that. Yes, we're practicing that thinking of Krishna while we're running around doing 1,000 other things, or 1,000,000 other things, or 10,000,000 other things. I have 10,000,000 things to do today. But we also have our time when we're practicing withdrawing our mind from everything else and just thinking about Krishna. So that's what we call our sadhana, our japa, our gayatri, our worship of the deity, our hearing the Bhagavatam. And we do this daily, and then we also should have some times like Ekadasi or festival days. And maybe sometime we can go visit the Dham for a week or a month. Bless you. And just forget about everything else. Just study the Shastra. So sometimes when we're really just practicing, just like I've helped deliver well over 50 babies, and one of the things I've also taught probably another 50 to 100 women, not thousands though, about how to prepare your mind for childbirth so you don't have any pain in childbirth. So one time, I had been out late in the evening taking one of these women that I was going to be with the birth to a preparation class, and we were out very, very late, so we weren't at the morning program the next morning. And the person giving the class, I don't know if I should say who it was, giving the class to somebody, but any of you old-timers know very, very well here in Australia. Anyway, a rather flamboyant person. So he was giving the class, and he said, where's Urmila? Oh, she was out late last night taking so-and-so to a childbirth class. Why do you need to go to a childbirth class? That's Maya. Childbirth is natural, so I heard about this because it was all over the community in half an hour. And then I went to see him, and I said, you know, death is also natural, and we spend our whole life preparing for that. So, what I found by experience is that women never make a direct, focused preparation for childbirth. It's much harder than if they do. So the same with death. We're making a general preparation for death throughout our life, throughout everything we do, but we also have a directed, focused preparation where every day we're practicing. Every day we're practicing. How can I withdraw my mind, withdrew his mind from everything else, and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna? That is why we worship the deity. That is why we chant japa. We don't want to do those things with our mind on all the other thousands of subjects. When we're engaged in the thousands of subjects, we want to be simultaneously fixing our mind on Krishna, and during the times that we just fix our mind on Krishna, we should withdraw our mind from all the other thousands of subjects. Then this particular human life will be perfect. All of our desires will be fulfilled, even in this life. It's not a question that, you know, you just work hard in this life and after death then you get to go to heaven. We'll experience the spiritual world here and now, and our desires will draw us to the eternal kingdom of God because we'll have nothing more to get in this life, nothing more that we want in this world, because everything is satisfied, everything is fulfilled. So this is one of my favorite verses in the Bhagavatam, one of my favorite verses anywhere in any of our scriptures. This verse is really key to how to live your life. What's the perfection of life? It covers pretty much just about everything. Thereupon, that man who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men stopped speaking and, being completely free from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide-open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who stood before him, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shone. So we have just 7 more minutes for questions. Yes, please.
Thank you, so we're hearing that we're getting in this life what we desire. But I always think there must be an element of we're getting what we deserve. Like, you're born crippled body in a poor family. Could somebody actually be desiring that, or it's more, it's what we deserve?
Isn't that weird? I think all of us look at our life, you don't have to be crippled in a poor family. We all have stuff in our life, and like, I wanted that? If not directly, then indirectly. But yes, it's all based on desire. We don't understand what our desires mean. I'm sure you've heard this joke. I'm sure you've heard this joke. So there's this old couple, you know, they're like 60 years old. They're going out to dinner, and some magical being appears and says, "My dear sir, I will grant you whatever you desire." He says, "I wish that my wife were 30 years younger than me." And instead of her becoming 30, he becomes 90. Yes, I mean, when we were growing up, we heard so many stories, so many fairy tales, where people get some magical being who grants their desires. You've heard this, I'm sure, when you were a little kid? And inevitably, they'll say, "I'll give you 3 wishes." Inevitably, the 3rd wish is undo the first 2 wishes. Yes? You remember those? Or one of the stories we taught in literature in the Gurukul was the monkey's paw, which is about people who desire some money. And then someone knocks on the door. "We regret to tell you that your son just got killed in a terrible accident. Mangled in the machinery at work, but you get some compensation, so you get some money." And then they were like, "Oh, if only we could get our son back again." Then this mangled zombie shows up at their door. You know, and then their third wish was put everything back to how it was. So, generally speaking, we don't understand the results of what we desire. We just don't understand. We desire something and we don't know what it means. We don't understand, what is the price I have to pay for this? How will this play out in my life? What will it look like? So no, it's all desire. It's desire as shown through actions, though. It's not just emotional desire. When we realize that everything I have is due to my desire, when we actually realize that, we become very humble. Because we realize how foolish we are. It's quite different from, oh, Prabhu, I'm so fine. It's a little different from that. Anybody else? Yes,
Prabhu. Just a comment on that, on that point of desiring it. Even in this life, we see sometimes people do things, you know, the doctor will say that, don't keep eating like that. Don't do that, don't do that.
Yes.
And they keep doing those things until they're practically invalid.
Yes.
And they actually, you know, just yes. like that, they call it a process and they became it.
Exactly. Exactly. Another way you can think about that we get what we desire is that if somebody owes us money, do we want to collect it? Generally speaking? No? You don't? You don't care if people owe you money. You can borrow, anybody can borrow money from her. She's good. But generally speaking, if somebody owes us some money, we think, you know, when am I going to collect that from them? Or if someone has something that's ours, we've lent, maybe you don't care about money, but maybe you care about getting your flash drive back. So if somebody has something that's ours, or they owe us something, or someone's hurt us maybe, we might think, I wish they would apologize. Yes, do we tend to think that way? I wish this person would apologize. Or maybe if they hurt, maybe we don't care, maybe we're so transcendental. But maybe if they hurt somebody we love, we might think, I wish they'd apologize to that person. We want to collect debts. And it works the other way too. I think for most of us at least, if you owe somebody money, do you want to pay them? If you have something that belongs to someone, you're supposed to give it back. Don't you want to give it back? Yes? And if you don't have it to give back, when you see them, you may feel uncomfortable. Oh, God, that's the person I owe $200 to, and I still don't have it. What am I doing? So, we have a desire to have people pay their karmic debts to us and for us to pay our karmic debts to others. We actually do. We actually have a desire to suffer as a way of paying off our karmic debts. We want things to be back in balance. When someone owes us something or we owe somebody something, we feel that things are off balance. Like I was once with some people, we had taken, I went with the family and we'd all taken their kids to, it was a zoo or something. And the mother had left a bag of her kids' clothes there. She didn't realize till we got back, like it was an hour drive. She said, oh, I left a bag of their clothes there. So we're calling the place, see if they could find it. But she said, even if they find it, I've got to drive all the way there. And I said, well, I have some friends who live there and may be coming up here. I could ask them to stop by and get the bag. She's like, no, don't ask them, don't ask them, don't ask anybody. I'm like, why? She said, because if I ask a favor of them, then I'll owe them a favor. I said, no, I'd be asking. These are my friends, so I owe them a favor. Not you, don't worry about it. But, you know, we have this sense. We try not to let things get too uneven, isn't it? Right? We try not to just take from people. Correct? So that's a kind of desire. And that desire also pushes us into other bodies, and that is the desire that pushes us into suffering. You can say we're forced by the law of karma to suffer, but we're only forced by the law of karma to suffer if we play the karma game. It's like, the karma game is like Monopoly. I'm going to end with this analogy. It's like Monopoly. Everybody who knows about Monopoly? Maybe you've had the misfortune to play Monopoly? People get really emotional with Monopoly. And it's all just fake money, right? It's all just fake money. So you're playing Monopoly, you owe somebody $200, they owe you $500, you owe them this property, that property. And as long as you're playing the game, you have to abide by the rules of the game. But you know what? You can quit the game at any time. You don't have to play Monopoly. It's not required. You can say, I quit. You still owe me $500 and that property. I'm not playing anymore. Sarva dharma vritya jama mekam sarna vritya hampam sarvapapevya mokshi shyami masucham. If we actually quit the karma game, then nobody owes us anything, and we don't owe them anything, and we don't have to take any more births to pay off our debts, we don't have to punish ourselves and go through all these things. But we have to actually quit the game. We can't, you know, superficially surrender to Krishna to get rid of our karmic debts, and then keep wanting to collect the karmic debts from others. So if I still hold grudges, you know, if I'm unforgiving, it doesn't work. But if we desire just to serve Krishna, all these other desires are finished.